Welcome to Death Radio. Today I have a fascinating guest with me. He's French. He's an artist, painter, entrepreneur, and also a killer and real-life cannibal. Please welcome Nico Clow.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for being my guest.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, having you on my podcast, I thought maybe I was going too far, but your story was too interesting. I couldn't ignore it. So thank you for doing this with me today.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
So you are known as the Vampire of Paris. And can you explain to my listeners why you are called the Vampire? Or do you prefer to be called the Ghoul?
This was a name that was given to me by English tabloids in the 1990s during my trial.
I was
trial in Paris for a murder case in 1997 and 1998. There was this nickname that they gave me because there was talks during the investigation of things that they found in my fridge. Police search, and they found blood bags because I was in a hospital.
So
they used this nickname to more or less classify me as a vampire.
Wow. Well, you were in jail because you killed a man. And before you committed murder, you dug graves and mutilated corpses and even ate human meat and drank human blood. Is that correct?
Yes, it started when I was a teenager. I was fascinated by graveyards.
So
I used to go to graveyards a lot. In Paris, the graveyards are really beautiful. So I would find peace, inner peace in the graveyards. But I was also very fascinated by what was inside the graves, and especially the mausoleums and the crypts. There was special rooms where you could have access with a crypt. And all you had to do was to more or less open the mausoleum with a key and climb down the crypt, and you had access to the bodies and the vaults that kept the bodies and the coffins inside.
So
I did this for about maybe a couple of years. The more I would do it, the more I became very knowledgeable of locks and of ways of opening the vaults with several tools. And it escalated after a few years, and I started to steal the remains, the bones, because most of the time it was only bones inside. But sometimes I would find partially decomposed bodies, and I would, since I was in a very bad place mentally, I was more or less exerting my anger on the the dead persons. So I would mutilate them inside the coffins.
And
at the same time, I wanted to work in that environment and in the morgue. So when I was old enough, after going to the army, I went back from the army and I started to look for a job in a hospital. So the first job I had was in a children's hospital. So, it was a morgue. And then after a while, I find another job in another morgue in another hospital. And I worked half time in the morgue during the morning, and the afternoon I worked in the surgery unit. And when I worked in the surgery unit, since I was one of the tasks that I had was to get the blood bags for the surgery from the blood bank and bring them to the surgery unit, sometimes I would steal the blood bags that were not used during surgery instead of bringing them back to the blood bank. And this is what they found when they arrested me a few years after. They found a few months after, they found some blood bags that I had used.
You said you were fascinated by graves and morgues. those things are scary to me, but you were never scared?
No, because when I was a child, I was very obsessed with death, dying, and all those things. It started with horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
I started to read about graves and stories about graveyards. And later on, when I was a teenager,
yeah,
I went to the graveyards, and this is where I felt the more peaceful.
Peaceful. So you didn't feel no fear.
Exactly. It was my safe place. It was a place. Some people, they feel like safe on a beach, or, you know, they feel good on a pool, next to, in a five-star hotel or whatever, or in a forest.
Yeah. But
safe place was definitely the graveyard.
Oh.
It's where I felt more alone most of the time, and I felt in peace with myself. I had lots of negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Was a teenager.
Mm.
By desires. I wanted to kill all my classmates all the time. Age 12.
Yeah.
These fantasies.
Yes.
Like Columbine, you see, the Columbine kid.
Yeah.
And, I would bring knives to school, etc. But sometimes they would find the knives and I was expelled.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I found peace and I found, internal peace by going to the graveyard. This is where I felt good, actually.
Mm.
And to this day, even today, I still love going to graveyards.
At night?
Honestly, there's two different moods. If I want a peaceful and melancholic walk and meditative walk, it's during the day.
Yeah.
If I want to feel adrenaline, at night. So it's different. Yeah. Because at night, of course, you're alone, but you have the adrenaline of being caught because it's illegal to go there at night. And you see things in the dark, so your mind kind of speeds up. And you definitely have a different vibration in the graveyard at night. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's different. It's two different moods. Yeah.
Mm. Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes, more or less. I believe in energy. So maybe not the classical ghosts, anthropomorphic ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe in the energy of the living staying after their death. And they can be trapped, for example, in houses or objects. This is why I collect objects that belong to serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
The energy inside the objects. And this is why I like to go to houses where murders have happened, because I feel the energy when I go there. There's definitely an energy attached to several objects or several places where people used to live. And since I am very sensitive to negative energies, I am sensitive to those kind of murder places.
Mm.
And when you think about ghosts and dying and those kind of stories, there are always stories about something bad that happened. You never hear a ghost story where it's a happy ghost who was hanging out in a place where that person felt good, or you know what I mean.
Mm.
It makes no sense. All the ghost stories that you read about, the haunting stories, it's about something very bad that happened, very bad energies.
Yes.
So this is why I believe in that.
Mm.
Negative energies and bad vibrations, a deeper impact in this realm. They, on a strong emotional point of view, they have more value than happy thoughts. I understand that this way of thinking is totally different from normal ways.
Yeah. No more happy people.
Yeah. This is how I perceive the world around me. Yeah.
Yeah, very unique. I think I can relate to some points. Yeah. I'm not a very positive person. So
I do not believe in good or bad in the sense of moral. And I do not believe in evil per se. For me, it's just a point of view. There's only two point of views to a story. And of course, there are evil individuals in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them if they think that they are evil, they will tell you no. They will tell you that they are doing the right thing.
Mm.
And there's always two points of views, see? A general mainstream point of view about what is good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
There are always side stories. It's always more complicated than you would think.
Yeah, things are just not black and white. Things are like gray.
Yeah, there's a grayish realm. And that this is what true crime is about when you think of it. Because most people, they love true crime stories.
Yes.
They feel guilty because they are fascinated by that. Because, you know, it's dark stories. It's not, you know, stories about success. It's stories about failure and death and dying and stuff. But still, they love this. They love watching this. They love. So I think when you understand your fascination regarding true crime and those kind of true stories, and when you put it in perspective on a different moral point of view, then you feel less guilty about it.
You also love true crime, and you have many serial killer fans all over the world.
Mm-hmm. It's a work. For me, that started when I was in prison. I started to correspond with other killers around the world. So, for example, in Japan, I was corresponding with Issei Sagawa.
Yeah, the cannibal.
Yeah, the cannibal.
Japanese cannibal.
Paris. Mm. Exactly. So, for those who don't know, he lived in Paris in 1981, and he committed a crime couple of years after in Paris and killed a student. And I was a kid when I saw the story on the news, and it's fascinating me. So years later, when I was myself convicted of this kind of crime, I got his address from a person who used to correspond with him, and we started to write to each other, and we wrote to each other for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years, about 10 years. And we even collaborated on several art projects together.
Yeah. And it was exhibited in Tokyo?
Yes, in a Vanilla Gallery, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
So, yes, there was this. There was also Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, which I corresponded with.
Yeah.
For about 10 years. And several other killers which are less known or quite famous, but it was a very unique correspondence.
Wow, and you thought some of them were interesting, but some were boring?
Yeah, right. Exactly. like everybody, you know, sometimes you think that some people will be more interesting because they have done this, but no, they're just normal people who have normal interests, and they committed those crimes, but it was a unique thing in their life, but themselves, their personality is boring. But there are others, like Richard Ramirez, for example. He was a very interesting individual, and I really enjoyed the letters. Yeah.
So you said you fantasized about killing your classmates.
Yeah.
But do you think you continued killing people if you didn't get caught?
Oh yes, I was actually.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I was planning other things. I had bought other guns. And when they arrested me, one of the police investigators, when they searched my home, and he said, yes, there might be other cases because they were investigating other cases. but they found no connection.
Mm-hmm.
But they found weapons that I had actually bought, mm-hmm. so that used them for other things. So one of the things that I wanted to do, but they caught me before, since I was working in the morgue, I wanted to kill the other workmates
oh.
in the morgue and cut their heads off.
But he was someone you knew.
Yeah, because I didn't like them. yeah, they're terrible people. They would only talk about sports and things like that when we were working, and I found them extremely boring. And I was a little bit wild back in those days. I had no limits to my murder fantasies. So, yeah.
But you don't have those kind of fantasies anymore?
No, I'm happy myself now, and I have found a way to actually channel my demons. Because the demons, they will always be there, because you know, I believe in something that's called dharma. Dharma is it's kind of like your karma, but it's a thing that is what you're supposed to be when you are born. If a person is supposed to be a policeman and he does something completely different in his life, he will always feel bad and unbalanced if he does not do that. I think certain people, they are born for a certain path or certain things. And if they try to do something different, they feel unbalanced. For example, take a serial killer like John Wayne Gacy, who killed several young men. He had a normal life. He dressed up as a clown. He was a contractor. He was a pillar of the community.
Mm-hmm.
But inside, he has this very evil personality where at night, he would bring young people to his place. He would kill them. He would bury them under his house.
Mm.
All this was born out of frustration. And I think that if an individual like that had recognized his sadistic fantasies, recognized his needs to fulfill them, maybe he would have found, for example, a submissive partner, and which would have prevented him from killing. So sometimes frustration leads to crime. This is a strong belief that I have. If you're inclined to crime or inclined to criminal behavior, I think it's useless to try to, you know, tell yourself, okay, now from now on, I will stop doing crimes, I will stop thinking about criminal things and try to be a normal person, because you will create frustration inside you. But you have to find ways of accepting who you are in society in a way that doesn't hurt society. So for me, it was painting. It was writing books. Now I am a publisher. I publish books, and I publish true crime books. And I also have a website where I sell objects.
Yes.
To serial killers or objects in the image of serial killers, t-shirts like that, stuff like that. Because I have accepted who I am, my dark self.
Yeah.
But doing something negative and something destructive, I channel it in something creative. So, of course, speaking, there will always be people who say that what I am doing is still evil. But the most important for everybody is that I don't do crimes anymore. See what I mean? So it asks a lot of moral questions, maybe. And some people, they don't like to ask themselves those questions, those moral questions, because it questions their own fascination with crime. Some people,
they're
with crime, but they need a moral excuse behind it. For example, they will tell you, okay, I watch documentaries on Netflix, etc., about serial killers because I like to study how they think. But for me, I think it's a bit hypocritical, because those people that deny the fascination, the real fascination that they have, they take this excuse. If you are honest, people, they don't want to become a forensic psychiatrist or See what I mean? They're not studying serial killers when they watch those shows. They just want to enjoy the horror story behind it. This is the kind of questions that I like to put forward through my art, through what I do as a publisher. So yeah, what else can I tell you if you have any questions?
I bet people have asked you this question a million times before, but what does human meat taste like?
Yeah. When I was doing it in 1994, was the time also where at my local butcher, I would often take horse meat for stock tartare. So I always compare the taste of flesh that I took when I was working at the morgue, because this is where I took the flesh. I took it during the autopsies, you know?
Yeah.
So I would steal the flesh from the autopsied bodies, and I would keep them, and I would bring them to my home, and sometimes I would cook them. So I compared this taste to the taste of horse meat, because for me it was, you know, a similar thing. But maybe now, when I think back about all this, I think it was much a question of context. And for example, there's tribes in New Guinea who have practiced cannibalism recently. Mm-hmm. For example, the meat to pork. But this is because the other meat that they are used to eating is pork. Mm. They don't have cows, they don't have cows, they have porks, they have pigs. So they compare the human meat to pigs. But I think it's a cultural thing. If you ask an American who eats a lot of hamburgers, he will tell you that it tastes like cow meat, I guess. So I don't think that he has a special taste, per se.
Mm-hmm.
More or less the taste that you're used to eat with other meat.
Mm.
And it's not about the taste. It was more about the rush and the psychological high.
Yeah.
That from it. The spiritual high.
Yeah, we eat horses in Japan, so I guess I can imagine the taste of humans.
It has a sweetness.
Yeah, horses are sweet.
But at the same time, the meat that I would take didn't have much fat, so it's like very dense. There was a density to it, sweet and dense. That's why I compare it to horse.
What made you want to try eating human flesh?
Like, as I said earlier, when I was a kid, I was fascinated by Sagawa.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I had this obsession with trying it for a kid. So, yes, I was thinking about it all the time. And when I had the occasion of doing it, I just tried it. And working in the morgue was perfect for me occasion to try it.
Wow.
The occasion to actually do it. It was also a fact that I had access to this meat when I was working in the morgue. So it was easier to turn the fantasy into something real.
What kind of people are the yummiest? Girls or guys? Young ones?
I don't think that there would be a question of taste difference. But maybe on a psychological point of view, yeah, I think it would be someone in their 30s, I guess. Yeah. The older, the worst the taste meat. The meat tastes, I guess. So, yes.
Yeah, like you said, you also published the Cannibal Cookbook, where you wrote unique recipes to cook especially human meat.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you in the world could write such a book.
Behind the Cannibal Cookbook was that there's actually different recipes that were tried by different killers.
Yeah.
It was interesting to actually write them down as close to the actual recipes as possible, and also include the background of each killer, which I thought was interesting. And I also included the paintings that I did of those killers in the cookbook.
Yes.
So, yes, it was written like a classic cookbook with starters, main course, dessert, with different cultures, different nationalities, and different ways of cooking the meat. So there's chapters about the actual recipes, but there's also chapters about how to get the meat, how to cut the meat. And there's a small chapter on the history of cannibal restaurants, because there's a few places, there's a few times in the history of true crime where human meat was sold in restaurants. So I think it's interesting to talk about it too. And yes, I think it's a very informative book.
Yes.
Except that maybe the meat is not that easy to get, but at least people read the book, they have an idea of how it tastes like.
Yeah, it's so unique.
it's a special cookbook, but it's for me, it's one of the favorite things that I did in terms of writing and publishing.
So there was an underground event in Tokyo in 2012 where artists got his penis and balls dissected at a plastic surgery studio, and he brought his frozen dick and balls to the event, and he cooked his own meat in front of like 70 people, and
yes.
Two women and three men paid $200 each and ate the cooked genitals in front of him.
Wow.
It became sensational. Do you still get an urge to eat human meat? Would you eat it if you get a chance like that? Someone offers you?
If everything is legal, why not? The thing is, I often get approached, as you might understand. I often get emails and requests, and I am often contacted by people who have this fantasy. And you actually want to do it. So I get this all the time because, you know, people read about me on the internet or in newspapers or in books, and they say, oh, he's the right guy to ask, probably. So I get that a lot. And even Segawa, once when I was living in Sweden, he sent me a letter once, and he wanted to move to Sweden, and he wanted me to eat him in my girlfriend.
Really?
He wanted to die. He had a desire to die. He was very depressed at the time.
Oh, and I didn't know.
He needed to eat him. I still have the letter. It's completely crazy. So, yes, I sometimes have those requests.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, no, the problem is the legal aspect of it all.
Mm.
And, there is a very famous case in Germany. It was a man called Armin Meiwes.
Oh.
And he met another person on the internet who wanted to meet him.
Yeah.
So they did a pact together. And the person went to his house, and they actually filmed themselves cutting his penis too and eating it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the victim wrote a letter saying, okay, I want to be killed, and I want Armin Meiwes to actually eat me. And they actually did this. Well, Armin Meiwes cut his throat, and he upside down like the Ed Gein victim, and he cut him in two. He filmed everything and stored his meat in a freezer for 8 months before being arrested. And there was a first trial in 2001, and it was a trial based on manslaughter, which means that it was not actual premeditated murder. It was decided that they would consider the fact that the victim was consenting to being killed.
Oh.
But prosecution decided after a verdict of 6 years of prison that it was not enough and that it might encourage other people to do the same. So they retrialed Armin Meiwes, and he was condemned to life. And he is still in prison 20 years after. Even if the victim signed a waiver saying that he agreed on being killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if there is a legal, in terms of legal means, it may seem legal.
Mm-hmm.
And the victim agrees on being killed and eaten.
Yeah.
Law itself and the government and the magistrates will always find a way to violate the law and keep in prison, because for them it's the ultimate taboo and you have to be in prison for your life. So the human aspect of this is very, very, very dangerous. And if people want to commit, well, to do this fantasy, they have to understand that there is a very great chance of them spending the rest of their life in prison because of this.
Oh, risky.
Yes, it's risky, yeah.
Okay, my last question here. I think you have really dark humor. Is it typical French to have such dark humor, or is it you?
Well, I don't like French humor. I think I'm closer to English humor. For me, English humor is darker than French humor.
Is it? Oh.
Yes, I definitely have this dark humor. And as I say all the time, I put the fun in the funeral.
Okay.
So this is my way of thinking. And I think since I have worked with dead people and death so many years, mm-hmm. and so long, I do not view death as an enemy. For me, it's like a shadow that's been following me all my life. So when you work in that environment and when you are always accompanied with death, you tend to make an ally of death instead of an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe that's my approach, and that this is maybe why I have this dark humor inside.
You do. And please tell me about your website. You sell your paintings and sex toys.
So yes, I have a website that I created last year. It's called serialpleasures.com. serialpleasures.com. And it's a website where I sell my books. I also sell murderabilia. Murderabilia is objects and drawings that have belonged to famous killers. So I sell that. For example, I was talking about Armin Meiwes. I sell a lot of objects that belong to Armin Meiwes. For example, Sagawa or other killers which I have corresponded with. I also sell T-shirts, serial killer T-shirts, and sex toys. I'm the only one in the world who has created sex toys inspired by Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, and Pogo the Clown. So you will find that on the website. I also do busts. I work with a special effects artist who does a silicone busts of famous killers and action figures. We have, for example, a Ned Kemper action figure. We have created a Ed Gein skull box. We have created many, many things. So, yes, there is only pleasure to be found on serialpleasures.com.
Cool. So dark, but pretty cool.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being so open and talking to me today.
It was a pleasure. And thank you for introducing me to the Japanese true crime fans.
Yeah.
Pleasure. I know that there is a lot of cases, very interesting true crime cases in Japan. I actually published a book by a French writer on Japanese serial killers. It's called Satsujin.
It's a very interesting book.
Yeah, it's a very interesting book on true crime in Japan. It's the first book that's written in French on this subject. And it's a fascinating subject for us who live in Europe, because we don't have many books about Japanese criminals and crime in Japan and Japanese serial killers. So it was a pleasure to work on this book.
Oh, cool. Yeah, true crime all over the world.
Exactly.
It's fun.
Exactly.
It was really cool to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nico. Pleasure.
very pleasurable. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and have a great day.
Yeah, have a good evening.